Hey everybody, Maz Jobrani. Today we've got an amazing episode. Dr. Ian Jenkins, he's a doctor, he's an author. He's written a book called Three Dads and a Baby, comes out March 9th. You can pre-order it now. It's about Dr. Jenkins and his two partners. They're three men who have two babies. It's an amazing story. He's an amazing person. You're going to be inspired. You're going to want to listen to this. You're going to want to share this with your friends and your family. He's here today, first of all, to tell us how, whether you're gay or you're straight, as long as you're a good person, as long as you're good people, you can be good parents. Secondly, he's here to tell us how jealousy is something that's taught. Jealousy is taught. Do you hear that? Thirdly, he's here to teach us how to apologize correctly. Yes. By the end of this episode, you're going to be so woke, you won't know what to do with yourself. Let's go right now, back to school with Maz Jobrani.
Maz Jobrani. Hey. Jobrani Maz. Oh, Maz Jobrani.
Hey, Jobrani.
Mazzy, Mazzy. Oh, Maz, 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 Maz.
Hey.
I got a podcast. Oh,
back to school. Yeah.
Guys, welcome to this episode. I'm excited. Meet my sidekick. He's my partner, Tehran. How you doing, son?
I'm great.
T. How crazy is this story, man?
You know, it's an interesting story. The best part about it is, for me, it's not that crazy. It just, it's life, you know?
I love that you say that, because as people listen to Dr. Ian Jenkins speak, you'll realize it's not that crazy. It's somebody who is so in touch with themselves and knows what they want and has been through so much that this man was able to end up in a monogamous relationship with another man, and then they met another man and they decided to become a throuple, a polyamorous relationship, we call that. And then these three men decided that they wanted to have kids. And what's crazy is that they had to jump through a lot of hoops to get there, because unfortunately society is not ready for this. And yet they got there. And he tells us a story, and the book is an amazing book. And you know, if you can't read this book or you can't listen to this episode without an open mind, then I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. I mean, Tehran, have you run into small-minded people within your own family? And how have you tried to talk to them when they come at you, either whether it's an issue about, you know, LGBTQ or about Black Lives Matter? How do you talk to someone who's a relative of yours who's small-minded?
That's so interesting, because the one place I haven't run into specifically small-minded people is in my family. Not because my family's so great and open-minded and woke. It's because my family has this "we don't care" mentality, right? So I remember even growing up as a kid and there being this, what we now understand is truly homophobia, homophobic sentiment. My father used to just be like, "Who cares? Like, oh, let them be gay. It's not like, what? Why do we care?" You know? And that mentality is something that I've carried, where I realized that's why I have friends from all walks of life, because I realized through the not specifically caring, it doesn't mean that I don't care or don't have allyship, just that if you're a good person, we can be good people. And that's all that matters to me.
Absolutely,
and I get that all,
man,
the time.
I'm of that frame of mind so much. And it's exactly what you said. It's not who cares, because actually I care, and I care to be an ally to the LGBTQ community or to any community. Again, whoever has to deal with small-minded people sometimes. That's why in my stand-up special, my immigrant special, the previous special, I said, some of the best people I know are gay and some of the worst people I know are straight. And so it doesn't matter. It's like, to each his own. And so for these guys to be in a gay relationship and then have, you know, a polyamorous relationship and then be loving parents, I mean, it just warms my heart. It warms my heart, because I've encountered, I used to do, you know, a couple times, I remember specifically in my show when I used to have some jokes about being supportive of my gay friends, and somebody commented, I remember at the Irvine Improv, there was a guy who must've been like in his 30s. He was an Arab American, wasn't even Iranian American, but still, who cares what he was. But he made some comment like, "I don't know, I don't like that," or something. I was like, "Well, who are you to? Who are you? Just live and let live." Anyway, T, let me ask you a question. Where can people find you nowadays?
I am Tehran all across the board, and just chilling in my house.
Dude, and Tehran is on Clubhouse, which is a new app which we're going to be getting on. He's on all the time. I'm going to try and get on as much as I can. Find Clubhouse. Find Tehran there. Find him on Instagram. Find him on Twitter. Find him at I Am Tehran. I myself have got my new stand-up comedy special on Peacock TV. It's an app, okay? It's called Pandemic Warrior. That's the special. It's on Peacock TV. Please watch it, watch it, watch it. The more you watch it, the more people will want to watch it, the more it'll help me, it'll help us move up in this world. So watch it, check it out, share it. And also, more importantly, share this podcast. Please find a friend, find a family member, say, you got to listen to this, you got to subscribe. We're trying to build our following as well, and we got a lot of great guests coming up soon, and we feel good about this. So without further ado, let's go ahead and one last thing, by the way, send me any messages at Maz Jobrani. Tell me what you think of this episode, and we'll read your comments on air. Without further ado, we've got Dr. Ian Jenkins, the author of Three Dads and a Baby, on now. Let's go back to school with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school, yeah!
Ian, Dr. Jenkins, welcome to Back to School. How are you, my man?
Thanks. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm fighting a little bit of a cold, but it is not COVID. So
that's what they all say. That's what they all say.
Dude, I was saying, you know, I had the same thing. Now, you're a doctor because I want to get your expert opinion on this. But when I got a cold, my wife was like, it's COVID. It's got to be COVID. You got to go test. It's COVID. And I realized COVID is to the cold what those like Islamic terrorists were to regular Muslims, or what like those white dudes who stormed the Capitol are to white people.
I don't think that regular Muslims are the cold, though. I think they're just people.
Yeah. Dude.
Good call, Dr. Jenkins.
Nice. Nice. Put me in my place. I like that. Well done. Right. Off to a great start. By the way, I was saying you look great, and I was saying, how do you do it? You're a father. You're a doctor. You are writing a book, and then you stay so fit. And you told me, what's your secret?
Well, you know, I actually used to be pretty active, but I have a shoulder thing and an elbow thing right now from typing. So embarrassing. So my current exercise regimen is not eating.
There you have it. That's it. That's all you got to do.
Well, intermittent fasting. It sounds better.
Intermittent fasting. I like that. Well, listen, let's stick to the topic here. You're here to talk about your book, your story, Three Dads and a Baby. Amazing story. I'm so excited to get into it. We're going to start with our question from my son, Dara, to you. Here we go.
Hi, Dr. Jenkins. I have a question for you. What was one of your biggest legal issues that you ran into while having your first child?
Dara asks, he's 12 years old. I told him about your story. What was one of your biggest legal challenges you ran into with your first child, Piper?
Yeah. So there were really two big steps to this. The first was convincing the clinic to go ahead with the fertilization, IVF process. And to do that, we had to have 65,000 lawyers get together and write contracts between each of the three of us and the two women, which then had to be modified. And like each one of those things is a different lawyer. And then we had to have three lawyers work with us separately to write a parenting agreement and another lawyer to certify that we said what we thought we said. So that was just a ridiculous process. And I never want to do it again. But once we got all those things lined up, the clinic agreed to proceed, and then it was just a regular pregnancy.
Holy moly. So
you're rich, is what you're saying. You're rich.
Oh, I got two of these kids now, so I was rich. But no, to your point, we are feeling incredibly blessed. I am a physician, my partner is a physician, and then our other partner is a zookeeper, so we all have professional incomes. And honestly, if we didn't, this wouldn't have been possible. It was very expensive, and I feel really terrible for people that want to have a family and need assisted reproduction and have limited means. It's brutal.
Well, let me ask you real quickly, two-part question is, first of all, if you're not a throuple and you're married and you want to have somebody help you with having a child, what kind of legal things do you have to jump through in that case? And then for you guys were groundbreaking in doing what you did. And so how long was that process from the moment the three of you said, we want to have a child, to the moment they allowed you to then begin the artificial insemination and go from there?
Yeah. So your first question, for a regular married couple, there's one contract between the family and the surrogate. I guess we would be assuming that the woman might be infertile in this case, in which case you might also need an egg donor. So there'd be a minimum of one contract, maybe two. But the married couple gets to be one entity, whereas we weren't married, so they made us each do three, you know, every time this happened. So that just added to the cost.
So I have to fix what you said, Dr. Jenkins. Regular married couple? No, that's just normative.
Nice, Tehran. We're all correct. We're just gonna correct each other. It's gonna be the most woke show ever.
Yeah. It's gonna be very woke. All right.
Woke.
But
I never thought of our throuple as regular, but I'll give it a shot.
Trust me, in my life, it's regular. Go on.
Okay. We should hang out. Sounds like you have cool friends.
But go on.
There's other little hurdles that we really didn't anticipate. So like when you do IVF, you have to have a psych evaluation, which is pretty bizarre for us. Like lots of people just get pregnant by accident or they're drunk or something like that. Or they just say, we want to have a kid. You don't get a psychiatrist in the bedroom for that. So it was a little frustrating, but the clinic just wants to cover their butts really. So they want everyone to say that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. So they ask the egg donor and the surrogate and each of the parents, that's five psych clearances. Are you actually emotionally prepared to be a parent or to go through this process? And for the women, I think it makes a lot of sense, not because they're women, but because they've got to give up their kid at the end of the process. So mm-hmm. if you're a surrogate and you make a baby with your own body, that's a big connection. And I think it's important to make sure that the person is ready to do that. There's been cases where they weren't. And one of those went to the California Supreme Court. None of us want to end up with that kind of situation. So we knew that our surrogate was the most level-headed person in North America, but the IVF clinic doesn't know that. So we understand that they wanted to check.
So how long was the process from the moment you guys decided to do it until you found the surrogate and were able to start the process of the birth process?
You know, it wasn't like a clear beginning to end point, because part of it was we didn't have the whole thruple angle until midway, because the first thing we did was adopt embryos. And we just had Alan and Jeremy, my partners, represent the family. And so that was much more straightforward. It was like, oh, you're an unmarried couple, but a couple, and you're going to work with a surrogate who's going to use these donated embryos. And so that was phase one. And we got to know everyone that way. We had a bunch of contracts through that. And it was only later that we did the whole thruple thing, where we were going to collect eggs from another person, our wonderful egg donor, Megan. And then to each of us fertilize a third of them and then try to be a thruple family. So that was like the whole process was, I'm going to say 2 years.
So I'm going to let Tehran ask a question in a second, but I would like you, just for our listeners to get a grounding of all this, I'd like you to kind of tell us an abbreviated version of how you meet Alan, meet Jeremy, and how long you guys are together before you say, let's have kids. Just so people can see the progression of how this all came about.
Yeah, well, I actually met Alan when he was a medical student and I was a resident. So I was briefly supervising him, but nothing untoward happened during that period of time. We got together after that. And I picked him because he was like the greatest med student. He was so conscientious, caring, responsible, and seemed like a great and interesting and intelligent person. So,
And he's now a psychiatrist, correct?
Psychiatrist, yeah. He was finishing med school at Harvard at the time, and we moved out to
California. Okay, overachiever. All right. Okay.
I was rejected from Harvard, if that makes you feel better.
And then you were finishing med school at Harvard. So that's...
No, Alan was. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I was only finishing my training at Harvard, so that's totally...
So you meet him there. By the way, I want people, if people haven't taken notice here, you three, so two doctors and a zookeeper, all professionals, decide to have a baby, and they got to go through psych evaluations. One of them is a psychiatrist.
Right.
And meanwhile, like you said earlier, there's all kinds of bozos out there that are losing their... The people that stormed the Capitol can have babies. Yeah. I mean... Hello.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I share your concern. I would be much more worried about the oops baby of someone waving a Confederate flag and taking over the Capitol than I would the most planned and wanted children ever. But everyone has their own little things that they get upset about.
It blows my mind. This is a learning moment. Ladies and gentlemen, this is back to school with Maz Jobrani. This is a learning moment. Our legal system is backwards. And I think, here's my assessment on it, it's based on our puritanical culture that is based on this religious thing that says, oh yeah, man, woman, baby, doesn't matter if One of them is a numbnut walking around with a Confederate flag, and the other one is, you know, jumping off of rooftops while smoking crack. That's a great, those two are ready to have a kid. Meanwhile, you got two doctors and a zookeeper. The people that should have babies are zookeepers. They get free tickets to the zoo. You understand?
Anyway, we do. It's true.
That's what I'm saying. So here we are, you and Alan, you meet in medical school. Then what happens next?
We moved out to California. We talked about having kids at times, but there always seemed to be like a big hurdle, and we weren't really sure we were ready to give up like our freedom to have kids. And then 10 years together, we meet Jeremy. He becomes part of the family, and we date for several years, and we realize this is going to be a forever thing. And we, you know, keep talking about kids, and he's more of a nurturer. I mean, he's like literally a zookeeper. He raises little animals for his work. He wanted a human little animal to take care of. And then we were offered embryos, and we said, we gotta take this opportunity.
That's fantastic. Tehran, what do you want to know about this story? Isn't it amazing?
It's so interesting, Dr. Jenkins. So I told my Iranian immigrant father about you and Alan and Jeremy and the situation and everything. And he was actually, it was so interesting to me how upset he was and so disappointed in the fact that Jeremy is a zookeeper. He was so proud of you and Alan for being doctors. He's like, this is what I'm talking about. He's way more proud of you guys than he would ever be of me. So how do you feel when society looks at your intimate relationship and sees it as problematic?
You know, I used to experience a lot of that because I kind of grew up and came out in the 90s in a more conservative area of the country in Central Virginia. And we went through some legal discrimination. I got assaulted. I got death threats. It was homophobic chants at the football games. It was a very different time. And, you know, I think the thing is, if you can get away from that environment, you should just leave. It's not something I think people need to subject themselves to. But it kind of made
where in Central Virginia? Where in Central Virginia?
Charlottesville, Virginia. It's
Charlottesville, UVA. I'm from Washington, D.C., and then I'm in Fairfax.
Neighbors, yeah.
Is it Charlottesville where they had the rally?
Yeah, the Unite the Right rally. That was super disturbing to see a place that I loved. Like, we used to run up and down, not everyone, but some of us, naked on the grounds of University of Virginia from the rotunda to the Statue of Homer and back. That was a tradition. You had to do that before you graduated. And to see a place that I associate with learning and fun and treasured times in my youth overrun with Nazis was super, super discouraging. And I actually, you know, a former boyfriend's friend was the woman that was killed down there.
Oh my God.
So I just like, the easiest thing in this nation right now is to condemn Nazis. I don't know how we failed to do that. So anyway, glad to be moving on.
You know what I like about your story though, is that because you're saying you came from this place where you know, there was these homophobic chants at football games and there was you know, you got beaten up and all this other stuff. I like the fact that you've persevered and you've lived a life that one could say, you know, as Tehran was saying earlier, you know, you now have a healthy relationship and you have kids, and so, you know, they talk about the picket fence and all that stuff. It's not like, basically what I'm saying is you could have gone in a totally different direction. You could have gone into a direction of just giving up and being, you know, in a bad state. But you're someone who perseveres. So it is a learning moment again for anybody who, if you're struggling with your sexuality, you know, I think you're an inspiration to somebody like that, because they go, wow, this guy came out, he was in a conservative place, came out, and now is living what to me seems
his like best life.
The best life.
Nice life. We're happy
out here. Best life. Yeah. I mean, even my father was like, join them. You should go with them. He wants you to be his son. He was so proud of you.
Basically, Ian, Tehran's dad is disappointed in him, and he's looking for inspiration. So if you guys are willing to, you know, have someone on board, if you have room for a fourth, he's coming over.
But we have friends that were in a quad now, or they were in a throuple, and now they're in a quad relationship. And that sounds like super complicated to us. We got five now, if you count the kids. So I think we're full.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a springboard off what you said, when I was a kid, I didn't know if I would ever be welcomed by friends or family for who I was. I didn't know if I'd ever be able to have like an open, honest relationship, you know, as an adult. I knew I would never be able to get married. And I had this long-term goal with my first boyfriend of like, maybe we could just go to like a holiday together and be welcomed by each other's families. And that was it. That was like peak experience for us. And the world has changed so, so much. And we're grateful for that. And we want everyone to know that you can have the family that you choose, and you can find a space for yourself. And as long as you can afford a $10 million home in California, like it's nice out here. But there are lots of other welcoming communities, including in places where you wouldn't expect. And I think like the blueing of Georgia, you know, in the last couple months has been an example of that. You can find a home in a lot of different places.
You just said the world is a welcome place. You were telling me when we talked before about some of the difficulties of being three dads with two babies and traveling. So tell us a little bit about what that's like when you go to Mexico or some other places. What kind of hoops do you have to jump through?
It's really not that bad, to be honest. Like, I think the reality is like sometimes people see there's three men traveling with these two babies and they're like, what's going on here? And I think that's a fine question to ask. I mean, if anybody sort of doesn't understand a situation, to check on a child's welfare is fine by us. We're not offended by it in the slightest. And so we just carry the birth certificates with us and we say, yeah, this is who we are. You know, these are the three of us and these are the kids and this is, we're on a family vacation. And then there's like, oh, that's cool. And you go on with your life. And so that's one of the reasons why we really wanted to be legally a family, not just say like, you know, I'm raising these kids, but to have the birth certificate that says that we're the parents, because it wasn't like a vanity exercise or to prove a point. We needed the tangible benefits of legal recognition to keep our family safe. And that's one of the reasons.
And you say legally a family, so you were able to become legally a family with the kids. However, legally getting married, polyamorous marriages are not legal in America. So what kind of pros and cons happen there when maybe the three of you go, hey, we'd like to get married, but we can't. And also, in your book, you talk about places where you can get married. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, the issue with polygamy in the United States is that polygamy used to have a pretty abusive history. And like the biggest area where that happened was Utah with the Mormon Church, where men in these LDS cults are still actually doing this, where they recruit little girls and they're marrying all these kids that don't have a choice. And it's actually pretty horrible. And so I oppose polygamy for that reason until we can secure the safety of all girls and women in the United States. Mm. Our ability to, you know, form a three-person marriage is not a priority for me. We have trusts and wills set up to protect the family from those types of things. So if we were to get married, it would only be two of us and we'd have to leave somebody out. And we would only do that for like tax reasons or inheritance reasons. You know, it's obviously not a church thing. That we'd be getting married for. So it would all be for the governmental reasons.
And the irony of it, you're saying in your book, you talk about places where polygamy is accepted. A lot of those places are like in the Middle East, but it's not polygamy with three people from the same sex. It's always a man and multiple wives, right?
Typically, yeah. That's not universal. There are cultures where the women have multiple mates and like a matriarchal society. And there's all sorts of variations on this. So there's this really interesting area of China where people don't like get married, pair off, and then raise their kids. The women are allowed to choose their partners and there's no expectation of like monogamy or long-term relationships. They just welcome people in. They have their own door that comes from the outside into their bedroom and they can have guests that they want. And then when they get pregnant, it's the family that raises them. So, you know, if a man is raising a kid, it's gonna be like their sister's kid. And they might have a kid across town, but that's being raised by the person that they had the child with and that person's family. So it's a completely different family structure. For me, it was really interesting to read and learn about all these different family structures because everyone just assumes it's gotta be you pair off and that's your only option. It's not true. There's all sorts of interesting ways that people have had relationships and built communities. And it's actually an aberration that have this expectation of monogamy. I don't think we're monogamous animals.
Learning moment. Monogamy is an aberration. Do you hear that, people? Monogamy is an aberration.
So I say if you want it, go for it. But, you know, I don't think people should be pressed into service of monogamy.
Maz, you're married. You're married. You can't, you don't want to get in. Don't forget, your wife listens to this podcast.
She doesn't listen to the podcast, but it was a learning moment. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you a quick story about a married couple. We met these people who are completely regular folks. You know, they're not calling any attention to themselves, not unusual, just loving nice people. And there was a married couple and the husband ran into a childhood sweetheart on a trip. And it was one of those moments of like, oh my God, like high school was amazing. I miss all those times. I have nothing but fond memories of that. And their thought was, we would totally go out on a date if you weren't married. And believe it or not, he took this back to his wife and they became a throuple. Like, you never know what can happen. So he was telling me the story and I was like, you are living your best life, sir. Your wife and your childhood sweetheart. And he's like, I am a lucky man. And I was like,
how common is this throuple thing? Did I miss something? Is it like
a throuple where everyone knows they're in a throuple?
That's what I'm saying.
This is the thing that was beautiful about it. When we went to meet them, you know, as a throuple for the first time, it was like a backyard picnic. And it was like, here's a 5-year-old playing ball. Here's their friends from across the street. Here's a grandparent on oxygen. And it was like the most domestic and ordinary thing that you've ever seen in your whole life is just 3 of them. So that's kind of how we are too. It's really not that scandalous. There's no reality TV show in the works because we just like make dinner and take care of the kids. And
I don't want the scandal. I want 3 people paying rent. I just feel like that makes the most sense. Like, can we make this a normal thing?
I want the third person during pandemic to join us. Will wash the dishes and clean the house.
That's what you're worried about is the dishes. Everyone else who's single has gone a year without sex and you're worried about your dishes.
I'm sick of washing dishes, Doc.
Who wants to be in Moss's dish bubble?
Listen, you also say that there's 3 women that were integral to this journey. So tell us a little bit about these women and also the types of women that they were, because I'm sure, as a second part of this question, you can tell us about a lot of people that you met in your life that either were against what you were doing or were disappointed, that were your friends that then turned on you. So tell us about these heroes first.
Sure. Hero number one is our first surrogate, Delilah, who was just amazing. She was like, I just want to do this thing for you. I think that having kids will make you a better person. It will bring more love into the world. And it's something that I think we need more of. And so, yes, I'm in. I'll carry a child for you. And we were just like blown away. She's amazing.
And was she a friend of yours, or did you find her online? How do you find her?
She's closer to Alan, but a friend of both of ours. We knew her. And Alan was sort of talking about her situation over lunch. And she's like, I would do that for you.
Wow.
And he wasn't asking. She just offered. And she turns out to be this amazing person. We're super excited that she's part of our kind of extended family. We haven't seen her as much as we wanted to because of the pandemic, but she's sort of like an aunt figure for Piper, and we love that. Mm-hmm. So hero number one. Hero number two is our egg donor. Fantastic, loving, interesting person, very spiritual, and just a great part of the family. And she was recently here for like 2 months, and it did not get old, you know? Like we have some family, and our general principle is like family's like fish, like 3 days and you gotta go.
Yeah.
But she was great. I mean, she just helps with the kids and she's a joy to be around. And, you know, it was fantastic having her here. And she was such a joy for the kids. To have a female role model is not a bad thing for kids. I don't think that men are everything. You know, I do think it helps to have a female perspective. So it's great that she's in their life more continuously than, you know, the surrogate can be. Our second surrogate, we did meet through an agency, but she turned out to be fabulous too. And she's just a super person. She was interested in our story because she has some people in her family that are like sexual minorities and wanted to help us out, and also just a giving and fantastic person. So we're delighted to have her in our life too. And I also think that like people worry, you know, how are we raising our kids because we're these 3 men. It's very important to me that they're raised with the right values. Loving, caring, supporting, honesty, protecting each other's rights and interests, and just being good, following the golden rule. And another thing I love about the people that we met somewhat coincidentally is we now have mothers that are, one is Jewish and one is Black. And I think it's so great for our kids to know that these are their family members, because you can't grow up racist if your family is diverse. Like it's very important to me. So yes. Anti-racism training for the day.
I love that, man. I love, you know what you, what it is you give us hope, because I think every day, especially when you're on social media, there's so much negativity and so much, you know, the news, and sometimes I just lose hope in humanity. But when you tell me, first of all, about yourselves, but these women and the love that they come with, it makes it, you know, touches my heart, because there are people who get it, because there are people who, I'm sure along the way, tell us a story of somebody who maybe you ran into that looked down upon this because either it was gay or polyamorous, or tell us that story real quickly, because I want to hear, because I know that person exists too.
I mean, they do exist, but you know, when you started to say that, tell me a story, and I thought you were going to go the other direction about another hero. So I got to do that first, because
let's hear the hero. I wanted to poo-poo the bad person first, and then go back to the
We go back to that. So, someone who looked down on us. You know, I'm gonna give you a story where we did have some friction, and that person ends up being a hero.
Okay, beautiful. That I like. Go.
Transformation, all right?
Yeah.
So is one of our parents. You know, Jeremy's parents came from a very conservative Christian background. And Jeremy's dad is actually a pastor. And they had to accommodate, you know, a world where they were never sort of trained to expect or to take care of or to love a gay son. And they had to adapt to that. And I know some people just immediately would say, like, if you don't immediately love your child from the moment they say that they're gay, that you're terrible. You have to be trained to do things. You have to be taught, you know, these values. And so they didn't get that opportunity. And so I'm not like cross with anyone who needs a little bit of time to grow. Like, that's expected for me. I'm used to that. I've been through far worse, so it's fine. Jeremy's mother had a hard time with his coming out gay and then with him being in a throuple. And she was, let's say, completely accepting of that initially. But she came around completely. And, you know, she saw who we were, and that, you know, I like to use, it's a Bible reference, really, to say, like, you can judge a tree by its fruit. And she saw that we were caring of each other and that we had these wonderful kids that we were taking care of. And there's nothing to turn a parent around like a grandkid. And so Jeremy's mom is now actually a fantastic grandparent. I think if I had to say, like, let's get a grandparent involved for, you know, like an afternoon or something, it would be Renee, because she does songs with the kids. She's done things like teach them about good behavior and bad behavior and expectations in families in ways that 10 minutes of her teaching the kids, we're still referring back to those things 2 years later. So she's fantastic. And so she's, you know, she gave us the most friction of anyone. Everyone else in our work life and our friend circle has been very accepting. But I think that she did kind of the best in a way, because she had to grow and change, and other people were just kind of already there, used to it. So I say kudos to her, and we're glad that she's part of the family too. So if anyone has a terrible parent right now, that can change. And if you're not sure how to accept your gay kid, I don't know, read my book or call me up. Like, I'll talk to you. It's cool. And there's still something you want to have in your life. It's really nice having that connection again.
You know, before I let Tehran ask another question, I have a question for you based off of what you just said, because our community, the Iranian American community, and a lot of immigrant communities are pretty hard-minded when it comes to sexuality, and especially the older generations, they're closed-minded about these things. And I've done it before in my stand-up, where I will say something that is pro-gay marriage or pro-LGBTQ, whatever it is. And I've had people in the audience, you know, sometimes it's been a conservative audience, that I've heard a comment or something come from them, and I'm going, I turn to him, I go, what's it to you? Like, why are you so bothered by this? And one of my goals has been, whether it's for LGBTQ or for Baha'is or for, you know, during Black Lives Matter, whatever it is, I've always been someone who's always been perplexed at the judgment that comes from somebody else. So you were talking about Jeremy's mom coming around. Obviously, having the kids is one thing that helps her get there. How would you, if you could, as a learning moment, tell someone right now who, let's say, is gay and is from an immigrant background and they're afraid to tell their parents, what would you say is a good first step for them to take to either prepare them or talk to them or just be themselves? What would that be? Do you have any advice on that?
That is a really tough subject. And in part, it's a little bit difficult for me because I never had to go through quite that of extreme a thing. My parents were pretty easy to deal with. And so I think that someone who has like a very conservative or immigrant community, that's such a different thing. I don't want to try to tell their story. I will say that two things to keep in mind is, one, in general, when you're coming out to someone, you can control the temperature. And if it's a huge deal to you, it's going to be a huge deal to them too. Mm. And if you think it's like this heartbreaking disaster, like, that doesn't set you up for success. Do it when you're in a good place. And just as a matter of fact, this is who I am. It's actually not a big deal. It might upset you, but I'm a normal person and my love is normal. And if you want to be part of your child's life, You got to welcome me and my partner. And that's how it is. And just be matter of fact about it. And that can help control the tone. That obviously doesn't solve the problem. The other thing is understanding that you have power. And that's sort of what I was referring to a moment ago. Parents want to be involved in their kids' lives. And so when you're 16 and you get disowned and you end up homeless and you can't go to college, that's a disaster. You might want to wait. But when you're an adult, especially if you've got kids, your parents want to be involved in that life. They want to see those grandkids. And so don't think that, you know, it's just they have the power like they always did when you were a child. The tables have turned a little bit, and don't be afraid to exercise that. Make a safe space for yourself at holidays. If they can't welcome you and your partner without criticism, then you don't have to go. It's okay to do that. And you can have a chosen family until your biologic family comes around.
Those are all great pieces of advice that I think my listeners will benefit from. Tehran, what question do you have?
So we're in a throuple, right?
You're part of our quad now, is what I was saying.
I'm in the crew. I'm in the squad. So squad. That's how we roll. Okay. So here's the thing. How do people not get jealous?
That's a great question. Well, my response to that is that I think jealousy is a little bit natural, but I think it's also largely taught, and it can be learned, it can be unlearned. My belief is that traditional human communities were small bands of people where they weren't necessarily monogamous. People weren't obsessed with whose kid was whose kid until we had an agricultural revolution, and then we had to pass on land. And so it was very important to know whose kid was whose kid. And then they started to control women and restrict them, and you can only have this one partner and these other things. For me, I think it's just being aware that there are alternatives and that you don't have to just divorce someone if they have an interest in more than one person. I think we can sort of look to the reality that there's so much either longing or infidelity or relationships end, even if they're monogamous, a lot of times they're serial monogamy. And that's telling us that we're not monogamous animals. And just to accept that about yourself first, and then understand that that's going to be part of your partner probably. And if neither of you want additional partners, that's fantastic. But not to be offended if your partner has an interest in somebody other than you, because that's just, I think, human nature for most of us. Other thing I do for myself is just focus on the fact that I'm not really concerned about what my partner gives to other people. I'm concerned about what my partner gives to me. And so you can sort of ask yourself, you know, if your partner is loving and fantastic and giving for you, why does it hurt your feelings if they also do that for someone else? Like, would you actually feel better if they were kind of cold and distant and unwelcoming, but they didn't have another partner? I mean, that would obviously be worse, right? So I just focus on making sure that I'm taken care of well and that I take care of people well. And I worry less about being in competition or, you know, being worried about sharing.
So. I read an article where you were talking about once you look at the family and the family you guys have, you're just like any ordinary family. You're trying to decide what movies to watch, where to go, all of the above. Now, it's me, my wife, our two kids. We just got a dog. Some nights we're trying to watch a show and it's like, you know, half an hour of run the trailer. What do you want to do? How much is it exponentially harder to agree on things to do and things to watch between the three of you now with the two kids? Or like, how do you guys do that? Do you take turns? Are you organized? Is it like you get Mondays, he gets Tuesdays, the other one gets Wednesdays? Like, how do you figure out what to watch or where to go or what to do?
It's not easy. During a pandemic year, you just stay in. But yeah, it can be exponentially more complicated. You can sort of alternate what you're going to do. But, you know, we basically have the attitude that we're not going to pick a movie for the family to watch that everyone else is going to hate. So, you know, we'll let people take turns picking a movie that we think is appropriate for all audiences. And then there are other times when... you know, like there's a show that Jeremy and I wanted to watch and we watched Game of Thrones and Alan wasn't into it. So he did something else. And Jeremy and Alan watched RuPaul's Drag Race and love it. I don't see it that often, but I watch an occasional show and that might be the time that I go work on a book because that's my big passion. So actually with three people, you know, as long as you don't have this assumption that you all have to be doing the same thing, it's actually more options because there's always a greater chance that someone's going to want to do the thing with you that you want to do because there's two partners instead of one. So that's how we kind of manage it. It's kind of more opportunities rather than, you know, you have to agree on everything.
You guys are so enlightened, man. I love it. I love the way you handle everything. You're cool. You're calm. Do you ever lose your cool at the house? Do you ever lose your cool as a doctor? You're a doctor during a pandemic. You ever run into somebody who's like, no, I'm not going to wear a mask. And then do you treat that in a calm fashion? The way, is that just who you are?
You know, I've had practice doing this. I did like debate in high school, so I got used to trying to be cool and, you know, arguments. I took martial arts for 20 years, so I'm not particularly put off or threatened by, you know, people that are agitated. I feel like I can handle myself. I got long legs, so I can run away too. So I try to be cool. And, you know, one of the things that helps you with difficult patients, some of whom are mentally ill or substance withdrawing or just personality disordered, is I try to keep in mind, act the way so that you get what you want rather than you say what you want. Because you might be really tempted to yell at someone, but that's really not gonna, it's not gonna get you where you wanna be with that patient's behavior. And certainly not a good idea in the house. I mean, we have arguments, everybody has arguments, but we try to do it in a civil way. And we have a very clear understanding of how you apologize. And you need to own up for, you make your mistakes, you go back and you give a proper apology. I'm sorry for what I did. This is what I did. This is why it was wrong. This is what I'm going to do in the future. Do you accept my apology? You don't have to. And we're teaching that to our kids too.
Can you run that down again before Tehran asks? That's such a learning moment. I want to remind people. How do you do the apology again?
Yeah. So people fill up and they say, I'm sorry. And they don't appear to be, they don't actually appear to be sorry. And so that doesn't actually win you any friends. It doesn't heal anything. Uh-huh. But if you say, I am sorry in an empathetic way, what I did was wrong, I hurt you, and I understand from your perspective that this was painful because of the following reasons. So you're saying, I'm sorry, you're saying what you did and why you know it was wrong. And then you say you're going to try to do better in some way. In the future, I'll try to be X or Y. And then, you ask for them to accept your apology, and they don't have to. That's a reality we have in medicine. Medicine, there's mistakes. And sometimes when you make a mistake in medicine, it's very bad. There's no guarantee that the family will accept your apology if you've injured or killed a patient. So you have to be prepared for that, and that's accept it.
I love that. That's definitely a big learning moment. I want to just take a second to remind everybody, the way you say, I'm sorry, don't show up and be like, hey, I'm sorry, whatever. And then like, you say what you did, you're empathetic. I see why that bothered you or upset you. You say, you know, it was wrong. You know, it was wrong, and how you're going to try to do better next time. And then ask them to accept your apology, and they don't have to accept it. That's brilliant. I'm learning from you, man. You're amazing. Tehran, what's your question to the doctor?
All right. My partners, they taught me how to do this. So I was the bad apologizer, and I came a long way.
So, Dr. Jenkins, let's say you and Alan are in an argument or, you know, a disagreement. And then do you ever go to Jeremy and then have him solve it? Or if two of you like gang up on the third one, it's like now two against one. Does that ever happen?
There is a two against one situation that occurs, but I don't view it as a ganging up. I view it as more of a reality check. And so there's been times where I really believe that the situation was one way, and I have both my partners say it's the other way. And so you got to sit back and say, like, listen, two out of three, the finding of this judicial panel is that I'm wrong. And you just accept that and move on. And we've all done that. We said, like, it's helpful to have that extra voice there. Sometimes two people are cross with each other, and the third person can be a little bit more of a moderator.
Yeah.
And say, like, hey, you guys look a little tense. Do you want to take a break? You know, I see what you're saying, but have you thought about, you know, this other person's perspective? And be like, you know, a little bit of a chill outsider that knows us and loves us, but isn't as much in the argument moment. So it's actually helpful. It is more complicated, but I see more advantages. So.
Well, listen, man, first of all, thank you for writing this book. I want to remind folks, it's called Three Dads and a Baby. There you have an Instagram page where you also have dogs. How many dogs do you have?
We had four. We lost two. They got depressed during the pandemic, I guess. We have two golden doodles now.
I have a golden. I just got a golden doodle. Oh, they're the best dogs in the world.
They're the greatest.
So
that, the family.
I know, man. You're just good people. But the Instagram page is at three dads and a baby. Correct?
Yeah, with underscores.
With underscores. We'll remind people. But we got a couple more segments we want to do with you. We've added a new segment where we're calling Back to School with Dr. Jenkins.
Back to school.
All right, these are questions. We're going to like try and get fast answers from you on all these. Right. First of all, you're a doctor during COVID. I've had some stomach issues lately. Do you think I have coronavirus?
I don't, especially if those are lasting longer than a week.
Okay, so if they last longer than a week, then I have if I have some.
If they're chronic, they're not COVID. It tends to go away. But I mean, there are people that present with COVID and their only prominent symptom is diarrhea. That does happen.
That does happen. Because I've been tested three times and they say you don't have it. So is that is the test foolproof or it's not?
You got to do a good swab. If you've done a good swab, the PCR tests are probably about 98%. There is a movement. I think China was saying they were going to move to the butt swab because coronavirus comes out that end. That's how you get the diarrhea. And you know, UCSD right now, my hospital is doing testing of the student dorms to see if the sewage from a dorm is positive for COVID. And if it is, they go in and test everyone at the dorm. So yeah, you can try the other end if you want.
Okay, I'll next time I go in for tests, I'll tell them to go down there. You guys are a thruple. Where is the most welcoming place when you travel for thruples? And I know you did a whole section in the book talking about different parts of the world and like we were talking about polyamorous relationships. What part of the world, is there a country in the world where you go, they're just so easygoing, they don't care, you know, three men, three women, two men, one woman, they're just happy. Where's this place? Where's this utopia of a place?
Well, I guess California, but we haven't been to a million places since the thruple, because as you know, packing up a kid is hard work. Packing up three adults and two kids is crazy work. So, and then the pandemic has been a limit. So we went to Mexico and that was no problem. I think a lot of people don't know what's happening, so you don't really know what they think, but it was fine. And we've been to a bunch of places in the United States just to see family before the virus, but I don't recall any trips other than that. So I can't give great advice on thruple travel. I would say you probably just want to follow the advice for gay people in general. So there's definitely places in the country where I'm not visiting because I know I'm not welcome.
What's the most welcoming country in the world for gay people?
Gosh, I wish I knew that. I assume that things are actually generally fine in most European countries. America is very spotty. So you can be very unsafe in some places and cherished and welcome other places.
Tel Aviv.
Oh, good thought. Yeah.
Okay. We'll go with that. Okay.
Tel Aviv has a huge LGBTQ community inside Tel Aviv that turns up.
Okay. Next question for you. If there's a couple listening to this right now and they're thinking about becoming a thruple, what's your one piece of advice to them before they venture out?
That's a very complicated array of possibilities because I don't know if this is like a straight couple. Because if they are, you know, are they bisexual? Because obviously, you know, a male and a female, if you're bringing in someone of a gender, is only gonna be a partner for one of those two people unless you're bisexual. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it depends, I guess. You know, if you're two women thinking of a third or two men thinking of a third, it's much simpler because there's a greater likelihood of a connection there. But I think the only real simple advice to give is communication. What are our expectations around this? What can we offer people? You don't want someone to come in, make connections, have feelings, and then feel like they were never part of the family and have been used and rejected. So we were very careful to make sure that Jeremy didn't feel like an extra or a less important person. We wanted him to feel like, I don't know, like for example, his debt was our debt, that he was able to make decisions about the home and be part of the finances and you know, just equal in all ways. So I think that's crucial, is to treat everyone with respect the way you would want to be treated.
Communication and respect. That's a beautiful thing. Our final question in this speed round for you. You're a doctor. Alan is a psychiatrist. Jeremy is a zookeeper. Who's the most popular parent with the kids?
Jeremy. No question.
Yeah. Well, I kind of expect that the zookeeper should be, unless if one of you were a magician, then we'd have a little bit of a competition going on.
There might be. He's also just an awesome parent. So I think even if he were an accountant, he would still be number one.
What a nice thing, man. So now we're going to ask Tehran. Tehran, what did you learn on this episode?
I learned that I'm probably better off being in a thruple because they have a $10 million house. Like, that is popping. That's what I heard. That's what I learned. It's done. Thank you, Dr.
Tehran. Jackson. He also said he had 65 lawyers do work for him. That was
65.
He's exaggerating. Do you understand?
1,000, he said. 65,000.
That's what I meant.
You can afford 65,000 lawyers. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, what I learned on this episode is how to apologize. I really, I'm going to take that to my kids. I'm going to take that to my wife. I'm going to let my wife know to expect better apologies from me. Because usually, Dr. Ian, the way we apologize or the way I apologize is I kind of like, if I get in an argument with my wife and we kind of go our separate ways, I walk away like mumbling to myself. I'm like, oh, this crazy woman. I can't believe it. I'm mumbling in my own head. I'm having a conversation with me about how wrong she is. And I don't, you know, this idea of empathy, of putting yourself in their position and going like, I totally get how you would have felt. That's a beautiful thing, man. You taught me how to apologize. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I didn't learn that part. $10 million house. Got it.
$10 million house. Well, listen, Dr. Ian Jenkins, the book is called Three Dads and a Baby, Adventures in Modern Parenting. It's available starting March 9th. I want people to pick it up. I want people to follow you on Instagram. It's at Three Dads and a Baby. Your story's amazing. You're amazing. You've inspired us. Thank you for being on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Thanks. It was a delight. You can pre-order now if you want. And I really appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. You guys hear that? You can pre-order on Amazon. It's the story. First of all, I know it's going to become a movie, but don't be lazy. Don't wait for it. All right? Because this is a great story. It's an inspirational story. Three dads and a baby. And also, by the way, you have been writing, as you know, throughout your whole life, from what I read about you. So it's not just some guy who was like, oh, let me use my whatever limited education to write a book because I'm in an interesting situation. This guy actually writes. So pick it up, learn something, and be inspired. Pre-order it now. It's on Amazon. It's wherever you find books. Three Dads and a Baby. Go.
Back to school. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Back to School with Maz Jobrani. We hope you're enjoying it. We hope you're having fun, and we hope you're learning something. So make sure to let your friends know, share it on iTunes, share the clips from YouTube. Just get it out there. However you're listening, let your friends know to tune in to Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school.